Welcome to Bookstore Explorer, the show where we go behind the shelves with booksellers to celebrate the magic of independent bookstores. I'm author and bookseller Matt Browning, and this week I'm joined by Shane Gottwals, who has a really fascinating story behind Gottwals Books. Started as a bit of a leap of faith for him and his wife, has grown into an indie bookstore franchise with locations all over the country. And earlier this year, their story became the subject of a documentary called Chapter by Chapter, which you can see on YouTube, and it's linked in the show notes. Really, there's so much to talk about with Shane that I'm going to keep it short. So come along as we go bookstore exploring with Gottwals Books. Shane, welcome to Bookstore Explorer. It's nice to have you here.
Well, Matt, it is a real pleasure for me. You do a great job with this show, and I'm happy to be on.
Thanks. I'm glad you're a regular listener. My first question, we're gonna handle a little bit differently because I usually start with a physical walkthrough of the store, but you're kind of a franchise, an indie bookstore franchise. But let's maybe start with your home base, your flagship store, if you would, and sort of describe the space for us and walk us through the shop.
Yeah, so we started in March 2007 in Warner Robins, Georgia, and that store was 1,500 square feet. We expanded it about a year or two into it to 2,700 square feet, and then within a couple of years after that, we ended up being at 4,500 square feet, but we were still paying a landlord to have that space, and so we had the opportunity right before COVID, so just great timing, but had the opportunity right before COVID to buy an old bank building. And it's 8,000 square feet. It's two stories. There's still a couple of vaults in there, so it's kind of cool. We have them hidden behind bookshelves. But so when you walk in, it's on a couple of acres of property. So there's even chairs outside. We've got the American flag pole out there, and just a really beautiful space. And even to be outside at the property, but to go in, we have silhouettes of book heroes all over the tops of the walls. So you see it. Warner Robins is a military town, hosts to Robins Air Force Base. And so we've got some aviation themed stuff on the wall. Behind the counter, you see Peter Pan and Wendy and just the children just sort of draped across with those silhouettes that we had made. And it's pretty whimsical, kind of gets overused, I suppose, but when you're talking about books, but I think our store really does have a certain magic to it. And you got the vault, you've got these huge, the place looks like a library. It's just, there's a lot of seating. There's two, as I said, two stories. When you go downstairs, you have the children's department. You've got a large fiction section. Most of the downstairs is fiction. So that's 3,000 square feet or so, just devoted to general fiction. And we've got Hagrid is on the wall in the teen room. We've got the bathroom, the men's bathroom is painted like Sherlock Holmes place on Baker Street. We've got the women's bathroom is painted like Narnia. You've got the lamppost going up the center, and the little women's restroom sign is right there in the middle of the lamppost. So just what was wonderful about that space is that we got to take basically, well, at that point is right before COVID, so I guess about 12 years of experience opening stores all over the country and say, finally, okay, we bought this building. We're going to do everything that we've always wanted to do with a real flagship store. And it's definitely turned out to be everything we had hoped. So we even have in the front yard, there were two giant oaks on the main thoroughfares on a pretty busy street for Warner Robins. And we took down these two big oaks, and they were beautiful, but you just couldn't see the store. So we hated to see them go. But one of them, we decided to chop down to about a foot above the dirt. And we put a sign in it commemorating in light of the Giving Tree book. So we left that stump there in the very front. Anybody going past it can see it. What's the line? It's blanking on me. But the tree was happy, or whatever that last line is. It's etched on a metal sign that's right beside it. So a lot of nods to literature, but it really has become a destination for folks, and we're very proud of that.
It sounds beautiful. We have a shop in my state that is a former bank, and it creates a really cool vibe. But the murals that you've got all over the space, how did you find an artist willing to do that, or how did that come about?
Yeah, so the ones in the shop that was inside the store is just a website that we all know called Etsy.com. You can find incredible artists on there. And so we had them made and then sent in to be hung. So they're actually wooden silhouettes that we've got on the wall at our Macon location in Macon, Georgia, about 30 minutes north of the Warner Robins store. We painted the entire storefront. I think it's 16. Different books, and it's right on I-75 that passes, you know, from Florida up through the center of Georgia through Atlanta and all. So anybody can see it from the interstate. But it's got, the Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Hardy Boys, the Bible. We've got a copy of Shane, the old Western novel after I was actually named after him. But To Kill a Mockingbird, I mean, it's just in beautifully drawn spines that you can't miss. And so you've got to pair art. You've got to pair all art. And that's wonderful about a bookstore, right? Like you can incorporate all media, all types of art. And so we really tried to do that. And that wasn't in the initial vision, but over the years, maybe not having to be so focused on the business of it and just trying to make this thing survive. Once things started rolling, you can just get more comfortable being more creative and investing in a big mural on the front of your building that cost a lot of money. But it's sort of more fun that way because we're enjoying selling books and promoting good art even more so than in the beginning. We're a little more nervous about making the bills and that kind of thing. So,
well, let's go back to the beginning. You said you started in 2007.
That's right. March of 07. And I think you started in March of 23, right?
Yeah, I did.
See, so we were just 16 years apart doing the same thing. So.
What inspired you to do that?
So I have an English degree. I had the privilege of studying at Oxford for a short time and academic when it comes to literature and read all my whole life and all, I mean, like so many of us would say, it was grown up in books. My mother really fostered that in us, but I also had a lot of retail experience, and so I sold televisions and audio equipment at Sears in the local mall for a number of years through college, and that's how I paid through college. And my wife was a business she had a business degree from Mercer University in Macon. So we were just sitting around one day and we were newly married and we were like, hey, I've had all this retail experience. I've got English degree. You've got business degree. What do you do with an English degree and a business degree if you want to open a business? Well, let's call it a bookstore, which makes like no sense. I mean, almost whatsoever. It makes no sense practically. But you're like, well, books and business. All right. Well, it's a book business. Let's do that. But my wife's parents, she was born in Chile. Her parents are missionaries, Southern Baptist missionaries in Chile. And he had mentioned sitting around at the lunch table one day that they had a little bookshop when they were in on the foreign field, and that's all it took. And so we took that concept, figured, oh, well, our degrees make sense, and kind of pieced it all together. And there you go with Gottwald's book. So that was really the a lot of prayer. But it came pretty quickly. I mean, the comfort level with doing it, and there was no reason to be comfortable with doing it. Like we literally had no idea what we were doing. We had never signed a lease before. We had no attorney involved to help us. We had no realtor involved. We went to a shopping center that was mostly empty. It had, I think, one Thai restaurant and a nail salon next door that was surviving, maybe a cleaner's too, but everything was empty. And I'm sure we paid full price and whatever, but it seemed like the right thing. And we stood in the middle of that empty space and held hands, me and my wife, and, you know, prayed that God would do something wonderful with it. And, you know, whether it failed or succeeded, that's, we weren't after money or anything. We just wanted it to be something good, and it's proven beneficial in many more ways. I'm sure you can attest to just, you know, in these few months for you, but in many more ways than you could have imagined how rewarding it's been.
Yeah. So when you first started, what was your vision in terms of, you know, the inventory you would have and what kind of books did you start out with?
So I sorry to keep throwing it back at you, but I heard you say that you started with used because one, it was the cheapest way to go. Yeah. And number two, I think you said was you just love used books. And we did too. I mean, like my wife grew up with, I mean, her dad being a pastor when they moved back to the States, she said it recently that she didn't think it was weird to have to step over books to get to your bedroom, you know, and it wasn't weird that when you move to a new house, and they moved all the time going to different churches, but to the first thing you do is put bookshelves along the wall in your hallway. You know, like most people put up family pictures. I mean, and they had some of those too, but the hallway was dedicated to bookcases. And so it was just never, you know, never weird for her to have all these, I mean, secondhand books. I mean, really, I mean, her house is full of them because he read them, he used them. And he got lots of them at Goodwills and secondhand shops. So that was the initial vision. We felt like we had a control of that, like we could, and like we actually made a documentary that just finished, or we just released a few weeks ago. It's on YouTube. It's free. Just search for Gottwald's Books and you'll find it. But it shows photos of that first store in Warner Robins on Watson Boulevard, that 1500 square foot space. And my wife said, we don't know what we sold. Like, I mean, when you look at the shelves, they were so bare. I mean, we thought 5,000 books would be a great inventory and people just, I mean, how could they not find something? But then you look back now, I mean, I don't know how they did find anything. There just wasn't an inventory there. It was all secondhand. The first book we got into new was Harry Potter number 7. And so even us trying to do all use and save money, I mean, we were buying books on eBay and Craigslist. And I mean, good grief, that's another podcast. But the stories of things that we would drive hours to go, we'd drive into Atlanta, you know, through Atlanta traffic to pick up a bunch of boxes out of some guy's garage and who knows where he got them from and probably ended up selling 10% of them. And most of it was duplicates and junk that nobody wanted anymore. But that's how we got the inventory. We drove all over North Carolina, where my parents, my in-laws, my wife's parents lived, buying books from every Goodwill and thrift shop, and they would stack them up in their living room. My father-in-law would tag them with our price sticker, and I'd go up every so often. I'd leave at 5 a.m. and pick up all the books, drive back, find a buffet somewhere, hopefully late at night to eat, so I'd have plenty of fuel to get home. Get home at 1 o'clock in the morning that same day, I guess, and then get to the bookstore before daylight the next morning to get the books out before the customers would come. And so they had this fresh supply all the time of secondhand books that were really high quality because we were learning what the customer wanted. That's the real issue with used books, right? Like you stock them, but unless you have a really robust trade program, which means your community is bringing in more books, it's people in your community are probably going to like. And that's another thing I heard on another episode that you had where, you know, every used bookshop is a community bookstore, because a used bookshop that does a trade program, which most all of them do, is a community bookstore because it's local interest, right? And it's the kind of things that we're locally reading. So, but to do that and learn, I mean, it's just hard. Like you can't pull up the New York Times bestsellers list. You can't ask your sales reps from the publishers, what are the top 50 books you would recommend and give me two copies of each kind of thing when you're selling secondhand. And so that's what, I mean, that's a later day, but that's what morphed into us doing a lot more new or a lot of new. We didn't do any at first. And also introducing our trade program. We didn't do trades at first. We didn't buy back college textbooks like we do now. We just drove all over the Southeast trying to find them from anywhere we could as cheap as we could. And, you know, we added in things like marbles, like antique marbles and antique plates and some frame stuff we would find and hang on the wall and put $50 on it because we found it for $15 at some thrift shop. And we were just throwing everything, just trying to see what would stick. But nothing ever sold except for the books. But unfortunately, we had to sell more of them to stay in business. And it took a little while before we really got traction with the secondhand books. But that's really what built our business. If we hadn't started, we didn't have the money to buy new books anyway. We had to do the secondhand because that was all we could afford. And it was just this pretty slow trickle before we could really find good traction and get a lot of success rolling.
Now, the timeline, let's shift a little bit. We talked about where you started, but now you have multiple locations and multiple components to your business. So tell us where you are now, and then we'll sort of go back and tell how you got from one to the other.
All right. Got it. So, that's a good question. So now we're an association, a franchise of 16 stores total. The franchise locations are called Walls of Books and they're nationwide. So they go all the way. We've got two stores outside of Seattle, all the way down to Florida. We've got quite a few in Georgia, one up in Ohio, Iowa, North Carolina. So they're really spread all over the place. And then we own the four Middle Georgia locations. And so those are called Gottwall's Books. That's our last name. And we have right now 27 employees that run the four locations we have. And then all the other stores are, I mean, they're anywhere from 1,800 square feet up to 8,000 square feet, with some with the owner runs. It's an owner operator system, or maybe they have a couple of teenage children that run it with them. And some have multiple full-time employees. So it's very different. We also operate a large warehouse. We've got a 50,000 square foot warehouse in Byron, Georgia, kind of in the center of all of our stores that we own, the four that we own. And we do distribution. We sell used books online. We ship probably on average around 150 packages a day out of this warehouse, just sold through third-party platforms on the internet. And so that's a big part of what we do. And also a training center. And we do a lot out of this location where my office is currently, or where I'm sitting at right now. But so it's a lot different than, as you said, than 1,500 square feet with 5,000 books. So we probably, if you add it up to, across all stores, I mean, we probably have about 1 million books in stock, and that's probably just the used ones. So it's pretty neat.
This is going to be a big question to probably try and condense, but how did you get from the where you started to where you are now?
Yeah, so a really practical thing I would advise for anybody, I mean, the book business is tough. And so, and I'm sure we'll have other discussion on that, you know, before this is over, but real estate is what really helped us. It gave us the leverage we needed to start growing. So for anybody, and sometimes it's not possible, you know, if you're in downtown Minnesota or somewhere in Minnesota, some big city or whatever, it's just not always possible to buy $1.5 million, 1,500 square foot bookstore, you know, but any opportunity, that's where we were able to basically have a springboard to then start investing in other things. So, so 2007, worst time in the world to open up any kind of business, especially bookstore. I mean, good grief, you got the economy in the toilet, and Amazon basically had taken over the world by that point. And e-readers were pretty much at their peak. So that's the biggest question I always get is why in the world, March of 2007. And it was just because we were young and pretty dumb. I mean, my wife's not dumb. We got to be careful. We're both intelligent people who are so ignorant about business. And that, and so, and as I've told folks, if my father, he passed away in 2005, if he had lived, we never would have done this because there were too many practical things where it was like, no, Shane, that is so foolish. You have never done this before. There's no money, but you've got this brand new wife and family that, you know, that you're trying to build, and a new mortgage on a home and that kind of thing. But getting, so I mentioned real estate, like it was really the opportunities that came after the downfall in the economy where you had a lot of foreclosures. Allowed us some opportunities to purchase. And we started out with an office building that we put an office in, and we started renting spaces that were in this pretty office building that we got for a really great price. And it sort of solidified and gave us some equity so that we could then have leverage to start doing other things, including franchising. So when we started franchising, that was back in 2012. It was a probably $40,000 investment, just to draft the paperwork the legal side of it is what's the toughest, the operation manuals, figuring out your training program, you know, so much intellectual work too. And it was over the course of about 6 months that it took us to do that. But it was because we had this sort of foundation financially on the property side. So we started opening some franchise locations. 2015 was our biggest year. We had, I think, 5 stores that we opened up then. And so with those stores, I mean, it's a business in a sense for us then too, because we do get monthly royalties and all that, and we do sell them an opening inventory at their discretion. And so it worked. And that then, some of the finances we would get from that, we would then be able to throw into basically every one of our bookstores, the Gottwall's bookstores, all have transitioned into bigger spaces, or we purchased the property that we're in. But so it all just kind of played together and you just sort of slowly go back and forth. Like I remember when we started selling online, our secondhand books online, we're like, wait a minute, there's an opportunity here to start flipping some of these on the internet. And the focus is the local stores. But when you can sell a book on, I don't know, mating patterns of African grasshoppers or something, you know, for $30 on the internet, nobody's going to buy that book in Warner Robins, Georgia. So you put it on there and you get the $30 because it's a niche thing. And that slowly grew. And I can still remember when we hit $1,000 a month in sales, then you know, eventually got to $10,000 a month in sales online, and then it's just grown from there. So, it, 16 years is not all that long, I guess, but it was also just so much hard effort. And I will admit that I think the big decisions that we made, the economy really going in the toilet early on, sort of helped us because of the opportunities it presented. But I'd say 9 out of 10 of the big decisions we had to make went in the right direction. Like we haven't had, a lot of business owners, they'll say, well, this happened and it set us back 2 years or whatever it is. We just haven't seen that. So it's the Lord's protection, you know, as a Christian, like we would say, but there just weren't all that. I don't remember down. Like if you said, what were the worst mistakes y'all made? I couldn't come up with a whole lot. And that means we were great. It just means we had a whole lot of good circumstances and they were not all our own doing. We're talking about a nationwide economic shutdown and that created these opportunities for real estate and all that. We can't take any credit for that. So
how do you think, you mentioned, running the book business is difficult business. How do you think it's changed from when you started in 07 to what's happening now?
Well, yeah, in a lot of ways. So, one, just the digital book thing. I think people, we probably get that question about, well, how do you survive when digital books have taken over? We get that more than how do you survive in the age of Amazon, which is really weird, because I'm thinking, when you flip it back to them and say, well, how many digital books have you read in the last year? Oh, like two. I only take my Kindle with me when I go on vacation. I can't stand reading books from a screen. And then you ask them, well, how many things you bought on Amazon in the last year? Oh, I'm pretty sure I've got a Prime package, Prime delivery on my doorstep right now. Right. Digital books is not it. It's discounted books. We are not losing the love for, I know we don't have my screen on this podcast, but we're not losing the love for all the printed books that are on the shelves behind me. We don't care. I think it was a New Yorker cartoon that came out and it was some guy that took his two old buddies and he took his friend into his living room where he had these massive bookcases. But the only thing on the bookcases was a single electronic e-reader thing. And he pointed to it like, hey, look at me. And the friend was just looks perplexed because having a device on your shelf says nothing about who you are. It brings no new conversation, right? You go into somebody's house and they've got walls of books up there. You've just opened up a whole world of understanding and commonality and discussion. So that's what I tell folks, just quit buying on Amazon and I will have a whole lot easier time trying to run this business. Amazon has been much worse of a competitor than I ever dreamed it would be. The discount clubs, Sam's or Walmart or whatever. We just haven't seen that. It's Amazon where you can literally get anything. It'll be there in a day or two or some places in 2.5 hours, or whatever, flying in from a drone. That's been the challenge. And that's gotten worse since 2007. I think Amazon had just taken its grasp and was starting to choke us out, but has just been squeezing ever since. And so that makes the bookstore, you have to be so much more than just a really good retailer. You've got to be a service industry. You cannot be a place that sells stuff. I wouldn't say you got to sell yourself, but that's what you're doing. You're having to convince people that it is better to talk to a human because those humans in the store are so wonderful than it is to click a couple of buttons and get it to my house without ever seeing somebody. That's the biggest one. I do think I mean, and not to sound real pessimistic, but I think the workforce is far worse, lower quality. And I'm speaking generally, I'm not trying to attack any individuals or even, I mean, our current employees are really wonderful. But I think just the attitude about work in our country is very different than it was when we started. It was far easier to find people who would come in and may not be the most skilled in the world, but goodness, they were going to do the job to completion. And if they had problems along the way, they were going to get help and they weren't going to leave you stranded. And I think nowadays it's just a different culture. I mean, we're talking 16 years. I mean, that's all, I guess, almost, I mean, kind of a generation is of this shift. And I think COVID didn't help with any of that. And we're only just now, I mean, since COVID started, we're only just now being able to find new applicants that are sort of A grade. Fortunately, we've been able to get them and we try to retain them the best we can. But I think that's much different too, just the work ethic. And then of course, prices for renting have gone up, interest rates. I mean, just go through the list of all the things that affect all of us. But the book selling industry in general, I think to end this question on a positive note, I think we have learned more. Booksellers have learned how to be community minded because we've been forced to be. And so even a store that just wanted to just kind of go along to get along and you just can't anymore. You have to be to make the bookstore work. You have to be a person who loves people. You have to be listening to them and listening to what they want to read. And so the next time they come in, they have an expectation that it's going to be there and that you're going to have another recommendation for them. It's to me, it's become much more, it has to be much more personal than it ever was before, just with all the challenges that we face. Because I'll repeat it. It is not an easy business. I don't know. In conversations, we have a lot of similarities with other retailers, but service industries, whatever. But bookstores have their unique challenges, and the biggest starts with the letter A, that Amazon.com.
One of my guests in an episode that's not out yet in the day that we're recording, but it will be by the time listeners are hearing this. She refers to them as the big bad A.
We've had those kind of words and much
much worse.
Much worse than that in our store.
Here's a question I'm going to toss out there. What's a typical day like for you with all of these components of your business? Is there a typical day?
Fortunately, over the last few years, that's one of the blessings. I mean, I miss the customers a lot. So I know this is kind of I'm giving you a much different answer than you've probably heard from most of your guests who are in the store every day. But I'm in the stores, but it's passing through. I mean, we have retail managers. I mean, I try to get there, but a lot of times I'm there. I mean, I might be the one that there's a water leak that came out of the wall into the day. And so I'm there at night vacuuming up the water because I'm the one that's on call, right? I mean, I'm the one that doesn't work 9 to 5. The owner never works 9 to 5, as you're aware. So it's that kind of thing with the stores, but it's because we have an incredible group of people that manage the day-to-day, the ins and outs. So what I'm spending a lot more time doing, we no longer do a formal franchises, or we don't do franchises as of early in 2021. COVID really put an end to us doing new stores through the franchise concept, but we're still helping people open new stores. So anybody who might be listening who's considering a bookstore or knows somebody, we do still provide that support. So some of what I do might be overseeing the purchase of 5,000 books from a store in wherever it might be, Virginia or wherever it is, that they need to place an order for used inventory across a bunch of categories, high quality, and I'll oversee what we're going to send, and we make sure that the warehouse gets all that out. I do a decent bit of traveling, so I'll visit our current stores, but also conferences, occasionally speaking events and things that just in the book sort of world. And overseeing the internet side. So I'll process through spreadsheets of things that we're considering buying, or I'll go through books that have come through the stores or textbooks that we've received, and sort of manage the presentation of those on the internet. And I mentioned real estate. We've got a few different, with including our bookstores, but different properties that we're still trying to manage and sort of oversee. So if a tree falls on something or a pipe bursts or whatever it is, that also keeps me busy. But it's nonstop. It's good. I rarely work a Saturday, and for years, I mean, for every business, I mean, business owner out there, or maybe not every, but the most unfortunate ones, we work at least 6 days a week, right? I mean, and many work seven, and I've always, up until a couple of years ago, worked 7 days a week. And, but that was me going into every bookstore at 6 a.m. to price books, clean things up, provide instructions, then go to my office and do all this other stuff I've already told you about while trying to open up new franchise stores. And I mean, it's been a journey, but at least now my schedule is closer to 50 hours a week than it used to be when it was pushing 70 or even more than that so often. My wife is appreciative of that. We've got five little kids, and yeah, she's thankful.
Are you at home, or where are you at? Because you got a row of bookshelves behind you.
Yeah, these are I collect C.S. Lewis books, and these are all Lewis books behind me. So this is my office that's in that 50,000 square foot warehouse I was talking about. I'm kind of centrally located between all of the office staff and the managers and things, and our actual un-air conditioned warehouse that has about 500,000 books in it. I could throw a rock at it right now. So this is where I spend most of my time.
I don't know how you want to answer this next question, but it's one I tend to always ask, and maybe you'll answer it based on, you know, your home store, but what tends to sell well for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, it's definitely all the kind of stuff you would expect. The Leigh Bardugo, the CJ Box, the Sarah J. Maas, the Colleen Hoover, the teen, or I guess we're calling it young adult now, sort of romance and fantasy. We're always selling Harry Potter. We're always selling classics. I mean, classics are a huge, and I'm proud of that. Good grief. If we only sold romance novels every day, I'd have to get another business. But yeah, classics are huge. We do a lot of local stuff. There's a publisher called Arcadia, and they do a great job with local. They'll give you a spinner that's got sort of regionally themed books. We do those really well. We're also, if you're familiar with Lifeway stores, they shut down a couple of years ago, and we ended up buying out a number of Lifeway stores, but then also became a Lifeway dealer. So we sell a lot of things like communion supplies, church materials, bulletins and tithing envelopes and that kind of thing, and Bibles and Bible covers. We're not a Christian bookstore, but since we became a Lifeway dealer, it's really allowed us to get a lot more into that side of things. But no, I mean, if we had to nail it down category-wise, I looked at reports recently. It's at least 50% of our sales are just in that general fiction category, romance and mysteries and thrillers and the John Grishams and the John Pattersons, or the James Pattersons of the world. But teen and children's stuff is, I mean, right behind that in popularity, and along with everything else, the audiobooks and the Westerns, and we do pretty much everything.
Have you incorporated, and how have you decided what to incorporate in terms of new books?
Now, that's a really, really good question, because we were just so nervous about it. When you start spending actual dollars on real books instead of like a credit system or a quarter, 25% of what you would pay for it, or what you would sell it for, offering as cash to customers, like, you know, these smaller dollar amounts. When you start paying your cost $16 for a hardback through Ingram or wherever it might be, I mean, that gets you nervous, especially when so many of these publishers and wholesalers don't have a lot of return options, it's not an easy process always to return. So we had to trickle into that too. So just over time, starting with one copy of each of whatever, two copies of this. Unfortunately, we'd have to go half the time with just, okay, if at least two customers mentioned it, then we'll order it in, which is a bad system if anybody's thinking about doing it that way, because you've already missed those two customers, and now you're hoping by the time it gets in, you get it priced on the shelf, people are still looking for it. But it could have just been mentioned on NPR that morning, and nobody's going to ask for it again. Like, we've run through all this. I mean, even just earlier, I had somebody message me, or one of the buyers, and she was like, all right, we still got this one on the shelf. I probably over-ordered on this one, and sorry about that, for buying new stuff. And that's going to happen. You just have to know it's going to happen, and that's okay. So over time, though, you get your employees involved in making sure, and they're more comfortable with telling you what we should be ordering in new. Because employees will be nervous about that because they don't want to be the ones that said, well, place this $300 order for this author series. And then it sits there. And part of that is encouraging them to hand sell things. And so it's just been gradual. So we went from being 100% new to, or 100% used to 99% used. And then we're probably, as far as floor space or shelf space given, we're probably only 15% new, but a good third, maybe 40% of our sales come off the new books. So that shows it. So it shows you that we curate it well. So when you come in, you're going to see just blistering displays of new books right in front of you. And those are moving with a higher frequency. And then you get into the store and that's when you find a lot more of your secondhand items. So, and we hope to keep growing. And every bookseller I talk to, and ones that'll call and say, hey, I'm looking to open up a used bookstore. I go back 10 years, I wouldn't have said this, but I tell all of them, you must sell new books. Like, you have to be prepared to put new books out. You need to have a small store, $10,000 budget to start out with for new items, and get one copy of each, but be ready to replace it as soon as you see it sell, if it looks like there's an interest there. So it's tough, but selling new sells a lot more used. And selling new, the problem for a used only bookstore is that they can never keep in enough copies of Colleen Hoover or Harry Potter, or whatever, or The Great Gatsby, whatever it is, to match the demand that's present. But by selling more new ones in your store, you encourage them to return those when they're done. You're then feeding your store with more of the freshest new, now used, markdown inventory that you set out as a used book. And we've had copies. I know when Twilight was big, we had new copies of that, of the first book, or I'm sure all the books too. But I remember one in particular that had four of our price stickers just staggered on the back of it, which meant that it had come in over and over and over. We bought it new at first, and it cost us however much it was for a new copy. And then we sold it as a used one. And then it was essentially 100% profit. I mean, it was a store credit that was given, that kind of thing. So, I mean, those, and that's rare to have literally the same copy of a book sell four times, but it happens, but it's only because we introduced it in the first place as a new book. So just a little bit of a, you know, book sense for booksellers out there, get aggressive with selling new books, but stay on top of it. Don't let stuff sit forever. Mark them down, do whatever you have to do once they start getting stale.
What are some of your favorite books to hand sell to customers?
So I'm just being a literary guy. I already mentioned him. My favorite author is C.S. Lewis. And I mean, he wrote just so many incredible works. And Narnia, of course, is what most people know. But I studied one of his books, A Grief Observed, after my father died when I was at Oxford, and Mere Christianity, and then got into Screwtape Letters, just go on and on and on. I'm just a huge Lewis nerd. Named one of my kids after him, actually, so I'm that weird. But so Lewis is always my go-to. So I'll start with that. But being a literary guy, Wendell Berry is just an incredible writer. I mean, incredible. They just don't make them like that anymore. And he's still writing. He's in his 90s. He's a farmer. Recommend him to absolutely anyone. And but again, Wendell Berry, Jaber Crow is one of his biggest ones. It's my favorite. Nathan Coulter is another one. I think similar to that would be somebody like Rick Bragg. He's a Southern writer. He wrote Oliver But the Shouting, which is an amazing book. He's got a number of other, the Prince of Frogtown, Ava's Man. He's just got so many good ones. When you look at like newer authors, I would say anything from Rabbit Room Press. Most people don't know Rabbit Room Press, but especially if you're booksellers, highly recommend Googling them and finding their works. And Wolfbane Books, there's a lot of good heirloom book publishers coming out, which just means just nicer books. They may not have a ton in their inventory, but just really well made, well designed, and well printed. And my favorite sort of, I don't know if you want to call him a recent author. His books have gotten far more popular here recently. But Andrew Peterson, he wrote the Wingfeather series, God of the Garden, Adorning the Dark. He's a musician. He's become a friend, and just a really really excellent writers. So that's kind of my swath of my go-tos.
You mentioned earlier, and I ran across the trailer of it when I was doing my homework, but a documentary has been produced about the shop. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so we started filming right before COVID. The guy who's always done, he's a friend of mine. His name's Dave Wall with Wall Digital Media. Right before COVID, he said, "I've always wanted to do a documentary, and you seem like a great subject." Not me, you know, the business seems like a great subject. You've been filming our commercials for many, many years, and I used to make our own commercials and actually see a couple of clips in the documentary, just how cheesy those things were, and making them basically in the basement late at night with weird dubbed voices and all this weird music. I don't know. You just got to see it to believe it. They were horrible. So he stepped in, made great commercials for us. And then all these years later, he said, "Well, I've watched the trajectory of this business. I want to do a documentary. I want to submit it to the local film festival." And so we started filming right before COVID, and I only finished up a few months back, and then just released it a few weeks ago. But 42 minutes long, but it really does a great job of telling the story. It doesn't do it in a sensational way. We weren't looking for to sell a bunch of copies or get a million hits on YouTube or whatever, but I was inspired. I mean, there's some good bookstore documentaries out there. One is Paperback Dreams, which if you haven't seen that, I highly recommend it. I think you can still buy the DVD online, but it just gives you a sense, like unless you've done it, you don't know. That's like a lot of things I know, and that's trite, but unless you've done it, you just don't know what's involved in running a bookstore. And I think the documentary for me was more, I mean, it's a marketing tool, sure, but we were never thinking this would just bring lots of new customers to our stores. It was more about, hey guys, like this is tough, and not a warning to anybody, but just here's the reality of what it takes to bring something from nothing. And here are the unique challenges of a bookstore. But it ends with my wife reading a quote from A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, all about the girl vowing to read one book a day for the rest of her life because of what she found in books. And so it ends very positively. And that was the message we wanted to get across. It's a wonderful, wonderful career that we've stepped into. And I think I'd be able to say that if we had financial success with it or sales success or whatever or not. And I know tons of the listeners that are booksellers, I'd say 99.5% of them would say ditto to that. Like it is a passion project, and making a little money off of it is a sort of a cherry on top, but it's not the cake itself.
Did you say it's available on YouTube?
Yeah. Just search for Gottwalls. It's called Chapter by Chapter, the Gottwalls book story. And everybody misspells Gottwalls, but it's two T's, one L, GOTTWALS. And I found it within a couple of clicks earlier just to make sure I was speaking correctly. But yeah, welcome anybody to watch it and give us some feedback.
Now, I have a couple more questions as we get, you know, close to the end here.
Yeah.
And one of them is this: when you think back and when you do this kind of reflection on the history of your business and your trajectory, when you think back to standing in that first shop back in 07 and where you've come, this is a silly way to put it, but how does that make you feel?
Well, like you don't, like if you had told me standing there in that little shop, holding hands with my wife and praying, like if you had told me where we would be now, it absurdity. Like, I mean, that's all you would say. It's ridiculous. I mean, give me a break. And the work required to get there, we were early 20s and we would have just wanted to give up then. I mean, like, forget it. I don't want to go through all that. So yeah, but when you're in it all this time, you don't recognize it that way. Like, I still feel like we're growing. I still feel like we're having all these challenges. It's on a different scale. And I think I've become more, and some would cringe to hear it, but probably more businessman than bookseller. And in some ways, I regret to have to say that. But it's because it's just a much larger staff. There's more property, more pieces involved. And so I'm having to focus more on that side with my passion for books still. But my exposure to books, and I'm not having those one-on-one hand-selling conversations with customers anymore. You know, I miss that. But no, I mean, I think the documentary helped answer that question that you just asked. Like, finishing that as the subject of it, you say, oh yeah, this is cool. Like, this is really, really neat. And we've been able to provide for our family, and my wife can be home with our five children. And it's not about money. Like, I mean, that was just never the focus. But it's about building something, one, that I don't know who, unless they were already in the book business, I don't know of anybody that said, this is going to be a home run, Shane. Like, oh, you're going to open a bookstore? Oh man, I've been thinking about opening one myself. Like, no, nobody was doing that. I mean, that was just, that's absurd. So to have that too, and not to pat on the back, but it's like, you know, for us, again, as Christians, see what God has done using us in this way. And it's so weird. You don't have, I mean, there are no bookstore franchises out there anymore. I mean, I don't know of another, well, there's a couple of examples, but that would have more than three or four locations, you know, and we've got all these. I mean, it's just, it is a blessing. And, but it's hard to see it when I'm still working 50 hours a week. And that's not a complaint. It's a total blessing to be able to do this and to have all the wonderful staff that we've got and the stories that you get along the way. I mean, you could go to every bookstore owner that we have in the franchise and go to all the managers and all the staff members in our four stores. And they could tell you these little stories and these little glimpses of just love and relationships and just what's been built because you have this place to go, as some people call it, the third space, or whatever the term is, that it's a place that's just outside of the rest of your life. And you go there because there's so much culture, there's so much surprise, there's a warmth. And when I sold electronics at Sears, I mean, you get some people come in. When you're spending $4,000 on a TV and some audio equipment, you get some tense situations. I mean, you want to return that thing that cost you paid a little too much for, and now you're regretting it. I mean, you get some agitation in the bookstore. It is so rare. I mean, people are coming in to talk about books. They want to spend $10 or $20, whatever it is. The tension is down. We're all going in there for the same reason. And it's unique. It's not a yogurt shop. No offense to yogurt shop owners. It's not a mattress store. No offense to mattress store owners. But the bookstore provides something that no other retail provides. And so to circle back and finish with my long-winded answer, sorry, but that's what, to get here, to know that we're having that big of an impact, is probably the most surprising thing besides just the growth of it. To know that so many thousands of lives have been affected because of a little idea that we had sitting at a kitchen table. But yet we still aren't responsible for all of it. It's all the staff. It's all these customers that come in, and just to be a place, to create a place is something I've been really surprised by.
I think some of the things you just said factor into my next question, which if you are a regular listener, you probably know where I'm going next. And it's that romanticized notion of bookshops being magical places that everybody has always said to me. So what's your spin on that, your take on that notion?
Yeah, so I did expect that. So I think that you literally, I just thought about walking around our Warner Robins bookstore. You literally don't know what you're going to find around the corner at any bookstore you go to, any bookstore that's rotating inventory. I mean, new things are being said, new things are being written. And yeah, I mean, most all of it is, well, it's all, if you go to use some biblical quotations, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, there's repackaged ideas, and it's, but you don't know what you're going to find around the corner. You don't know who's saying what. You don't know how somebody might be saying something new. It might be something that you've never heard before, never thought before. And you literally don't know what you're going to find around the corner. And it changes more deeply than walking around the corner at Target every time you make a new visit. So a place that is so retail, like a Target, you sort of can figure it out after a little while, right? I mean, if you're, I mean, even a casual shopper, I mean, you get the scope of what a Target is after a few visits. You can't get the scope, because it's impossible to explore the depths of everything that's in a bookstore. And then you say, well, why is it different than than a library. It's because in a bookstore, all these ideas, all these new experiences, all this magic to get to your question can be yours. Like you can take it home. And then when you go back the next time, even if not a book has changed on the shelf, there's going to be something different that you're going to find, something else that stands out to you. Like it's just this well of knowledge, insight, comfort, guidance. I mean, relationships that are coming out of books, so relations that you then have in commonality. It's like Lewis said, friendship is born in that moment when someone says to themselves, wait a minute, you know, or says to someone else, wait a minute, you too? Like there's a commonality that's discovered and you find those in books. So that's where the magic is. And Narnia and the Wing Feather series and all these fantastic and The Wrinkle in Time, all these fantastical stories that we come across too, right? But the magic is in the people and the authors who wrote that stuff. And there's no way going into a bookstore, even a small bookstore, that you can ever grasp all the things that could be coming at you if you just open up all the pages. There's unending depth in a bookstore. And that's what we're really doing as booksellers.
I like this conversation to be unending. such a great conversation, but I'll wrap it up here and I'll put the link to the YouTube. I'll find the YouTube link and put it in our show notes, listeners, so you can find the documentary. But tell us your website and your social media handles. Any other things you want to toss out there before we go?
Yeah, I think the easiest way, I'll keep it simple, is Gottwald's Books of Middle Georgia on Facebook. And then through there, you can find Instagram and TikTok and all that too. That's probably the best place to go to see what we're all about and see author events and pictures of the stores and everything. And then for the training that we do, the Walls of Books Network, it's just wallsofbooks.net. And it shows you where all the different stores are located, kind of what we do, the services that we offer, kind of vary state by state according to various laws and things. But we do still help folks open up new bookstores. So yeah, Gottwald's Books, Middle Georgia on social media, wallsofbooks.net for the bookstore consulting and training side.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Shane. It's been great. Great to talk to you and to learn more. And I want to go watch the documentary tonight.
Go for it.
Bookstore Explorer is produced and hosted by me, Matt Browning. Our theme music is Come Right Back to You by Max Hickson. You can follow all my bookstore explorations at bookstoreexplorer.com or on Instagram and Facebook at Bookstore Explorer. And follow us on Twitter at BookstoreExplr. Thanks for listening.